You're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for the Holy Crowley Hour.
I don't know what we were just listening to, but I feel like my woke score has just gone up by 50 points.
My chakras are cleansed.
Yeah. Good evening and welcome to the Holy Crowley Hour, the only radio show with a puppet government.
For those of you who don't happen to have someone's hands up your backside, and that, you know, at least 10% of the population does in Portland right now, you might be asking yourself, what is the Holy Crowley Hour?
Well, sometime several years ago, a KBOO talk show caller made an accusation. She claimed that there were several late-night DJs at the station who belonged to an Aleister Crowley cult.
Aleister Crowley, for those of you who don't know, was a remarkable Englishman who lived from 1875 to 1947. He founded the religion of Thunderbolt and styled himself a prophet, leading humanity into a new age of self-realization. He was also accused by some of being a Satanist and had the press at the time that that's him as the wickedest man in the world. Alas, those were more innocent times.
That was before the lizard people took over. Now back to that KBOO caller. In her defense, she was partly right. Many of our late-night DJs, myself included, are members of a cult, and this cult is led by a Crowley. However, it's not the cult led by Aleister Crowley, who has been dead for quite a long time. Rather, it's the one led by his brother Carl. Carl Crowley. Carl is Aleister's little-known brother. His little-known brother, since he's still alive, and that's just the way he wants it.
You're probably wondering by now, is there any difference between the two Crowley cults? Yes, there are some major differences. For instance, Aleister Crowley's cult has but one commandment, do as you will.
Not to be confused with Do What You Like, which was the short-lived cult by Ginger Baker, also deceased.
Carl Crowley's cult has also but one commandment, do what I tell you. Oh yeah, and that's the commandment we follow here in the Holy Crowley Hour. Whatever Carl tells us to say or play on the show is what we say and play. We do what we tell and have no voice over what we're about to hear. It's a new caber. The program is under Carl's complete control.
However, we will say that it's fortunate for you, the listener, that Carl Crowley has impeccable taste. We'll be playing radio theater, podcast, comedy, novelty bits, and a few tunes guaranteed to entertain and enlighten, which is a whole lot better than we could say for some cults that consist entirely of puppets. Puppets, ha! More like pathetic looking for... What? What's this? Who wrote this?
More
furry socks with
socks.
Buttons for eyes. I gotta read these things before I go on the air.
Come on.
With absolutely no sense of taste.
What?
That's it. No. What? What? Who wrote
this? Who wrote this?
I find this offensive to puppets of color.
POCs.
Especially orange ones.
Hot pink ones.
Ken Jones, get out from behind that mixing board, you scoundrel!
Yeah, how's you ever heard of you mentioned?
For this I went out at 10 o'clock on a rainy Portland evening?
For this I'm sober?
Alright, come back here and face the music! We're waiting! Get back here now!
You're listening to the Holy Crowley Hour on KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation. On tonight's show, we're happy to welcome live in the studio with us, Joshua Samuel Brown.
Hello.
And Stephanie Huffman.
Hello.
Author of the books Formosa Moon from Things Asian Press, along with Seth Brown, a.k.a. Yorick Jones, no relation. They also wrote, performed, and produced the legendary radio comedy show Puppet Radio Theater on KBOO.
On this very station.
In this very room.
I wrote most of it in the shower, actually, but we performed it here.
Formosa Moon is part memoir, part travel guide, in which Josh and Stephanie tell the story of their move from Portland, Oregon to Taiwan in January 2017, and puppet radio theater is all funny radio theater sketch comedy. We'll talk to Josh and Stephanie about the book and the show and play a few of those sketches to delight and entertain you. Josh and Stephanie, thanks so much for joining us and bringing those infernal puppets with you.
Thank you for having us back.
Yes, it is fun to be in the studio.
You'll be hearing from my lawyer.
Puppets of color. Who wrote that? Josh, before we get back to the puppets, and we will, inevitably.
Oh, good.
Let's talk about the book, Formosa Moon. As mentioned in the intro, you and Stephanie left Portland almost 3 years ago to this very day.
Yes, almost, very close, yeah.
And returned to one of your favorite places, Taiwan. It was a move Stephanie knew was coming, but was reluctant to make. What attracted
you? For very
you?
Good reasons, it turned out.
We'll find those out. But first, I want to know what attracted you back to Taiwan and what's special about the place for you?
I've just been in love with Taiwan for many years. I moved there when I was 24. I sort of had my second childhood there. I lived there in the mid-90s up until about 2000, and I would always keep going back there. It's a very interesting place. It's always changing. It's very dynamic. It's very noisy, perhaps a bit too noisy. Pro tip, don't move next door to a Taoist temple if you like to sleep late. Didn't figure that out until it was too late. But there's just always something going on there, and it's also a very politically speaking, this is a very interesting time to be there because as the rest of the world seems to slide closer and closer towards a sort of authoritarianism and nationalism, Taiwan is becoming one of the most progressive places in Asia and perhaps even the world. They've got a really cool president. Her name is Tsai Ing-wen.
And that was a recent election.
She was re-elected.
She just won re-election.
We were a little bit concerned. Uh-huh. But she's been in now for 4 years, so she's going to be able to solidify things. They've got legalized. They've got same-sex marriage there. It's on the books. And it's just a really nice place. And I really like the people there.
Yeah.
And now, Stephanie, we mentioned some of your reservations initially, but you knew the move was coming at some point in the relationship. That was something Josh talked about and you both discussed early on?
Yeah, it was interesting. I still remember it was in his old apartment and he basically said, Taiwan will always be the other woman. And if you want to be in a relationship with me, you have to accept that and accept that sometimes, you know, she'll call me back and I have to go back and spend time with her. And you can come with me, but if you don't want to, I'm still going to go. And it was, he was very uncharacteristically serious. And so I was like, oh, okay, this is a big deal. And so I knew it was coming, but it was just, it was always like, oh yeah, that's in the future. So it didn't start feeling real until when I got the opportunity to go back to school and then he started going back to Taiwan on trips. And then we started planning it for real. And then it just started happening and it happened really quickly. It felt like, just in a matter of months, then all of a sudden we were there.
Now, what were your reservations, misgivings? I know it's kind of fearful to pick up and leave kind of what feels like home to go to another country.
Portland was very good to me, and I really felt like part of a community here. I felt like Portland really got me, and I fit in, and so that was hard to leave. Going to a place where I didn't speak the language was a little intimidating. I had lived overseas before. I lived in the Dominican Republic, and I didn't speak Spanish when I first moved there. So I knew I could do it, but just there's a lot more people that live in Taiwan than the DR. And so just moving to such a large city, because Portland was a big city to me when I first moved here. So that was also a little intimidating. And it's weird to suddenly go to a place and be illiterate. It's a very strange
feeling. It's a very difficult language to pick up.
Yeah. And so...
But you knew, we were talking before, you knew Ni Hao and Xie
Xie.
Yeah,
Ni Hao and Xie Xie get you so far. It really does.
her reading has actually gotten quite good. So her reading probably is better than mine at this point.
Amazing.
I guess so. I've never been all that literate in Chinese. I can speak it really fluently, but reading it comes and it goes with me. But she practices a lot of reading more than I do.
Now, Josh, when you both moved to Taiwan, you had a mission to kind of sell the place to Stephanie and convince
her
to stay,
which
is really the story of the book Formosa Moon. How'd you go about doing that?
I took her immediately to the nicest parts of the country. So Taiwan is basically it's a smallish island. It's about the size of New Hampshire and Vermont together. The west side there's a lot of cool stuff on the west side, but that's the side where you tend to get more of the industry, more of the cities, and the air quality tends to be a little bit worse there because it's facing China and the industry. The east coast, which is past the mountains, is just gorgeous. It's where there are only two cities and they're very small and it's just little towns and that's where they grow palm trees and vegetables and beautiful, beautiful oceanfront property. And so I took her there first, and we spent the first basically 12 to 15 days of the book research going down the East Coast. And in that time, we got a free balloon ride, which is always a way to make somebody love a place.
That was
up
amazing.
In a balloon. Although we had to get up really early. You didn't like it when I had to get you up at 4 in the morning.
Yeah, I hated it. But then once you're in the balloon, it's so worth it.
So, and of course, we kept really busy. And part of the thing that we got to do with the book was we actually, because I planned a little bit in advance, we got to go to places where there were people waiting for us when we got off the train to take us around and show us the really nice things. So that was a little bit of planning.
So that was quite a bit in advance. But you had been there before, of course.
Oh, yeah.
You had even led bicycle tours,
right?
I
led bicycle tours there. And the various – I was able to write to people who knew me because of my work for Lonely Planet. And they were like, oh, you're coming back to do a book independently. Sure, we'd love to, show you and your partner around.
Now, what strikes me and probably most readers about the book is the very interesting format where you and Stephanie alternate chapters.
Yeah.
So it's
kind
of a he said – she said, how did you decide on that structure?
I think originally we were just going to do whole chapters, but then wasn't there it seems like we both need to write this part of the book?
At some point, originally it was like I was going to do a chapter, you were going to do a chapter.
Yeah.
And then it seemed like organically that didn't make sense because sometimes we would be in the middle of a chapter and it would be in your voice and then you were like, I actually want Josh to take this over to tell the rest of this story. And it just organically worked out better like that. And it just turned out that was the better way to do it. And that means that there are a few chapters that are in my voice only. There are a few chapters that are in her voice only.
Yeah, we have a few.
But most of them are a good mix. And I think that it worked out really well.
Oh, I agree.
And when we do readings, then that's how we break it up. And it makes the reading sound better, too.
Yeah.
And on that note, should we plug the reading that we're going to be doing?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Why don't we go
ahead? Please.
We'll be doing a reading at Belmont Books.
Next month.
Next month, February the 22nd at 3 p.m. We'll mention it again. But just to show up and come on down, we'll be reading from the book and we'll have copies of it. And, maybe somebody will bring bubble milk tea. We'll be inviting members of the local Taiwanese community. And we'll see what happens with that. But February 22nd, 3 p.m. at Belmont Books.
Yes, there will be puppets, too.
Belmont. There will be puppets.
We have a little preview without puppets at the beginning of the show, and we'll get back to
the puppets,
too. Now, Stephanie, one of my favorite parts of the book is your adventures with a fortune teller in the town of...
Everyone loves that chapter.
Yeah, that pretty much ruined our life.
She kind of reappears throughout the book at certain times.
She's been hiding from us, by the way. I need to point out she's been hiding from us. We'll get you, Madam Lee.
I'm not surprised if she picked up a copy of the book, but it's Madam Chen.
Madam
Chen,
right? Thank you.
And the town is Tainan, is how
Tainan,
it's pronounced.
Yeah.
Stephanie, can you tell us a little bit about Madam Chen and your adventures with her fortune telling?
That was so fascinating. First of all, so we lived in Taipei after we wrote the book. So that's in the north of Taiwan.
Tainan is the capital city.
Right. Tainan is in the very bottom, and it's very arty. There's a lot of culture there. And so we thought it would be really interesting, let's do a traditional Chinese fortune teller. That would be really cool. And it would really bring a different aspect to the book. And so the idea, the subtitle in Chinese was going to be Taiwanese Honeymoon or
something like that.
Something like that. And so it was kind of vague. And so she did our fortunes. And Josh went first. He did it one day, and I did it the second day. And she basically, it was funny, in Chinese,
she said, you want me to sugarcoat this or not?
And he's like, no,
just tell me.
Tell me
you had a choice.
But she told him in Chinese that we shouldn't get married.
You mean, 两个不应该结婚,一定不要结婚.
And
shouldn't marry. Don't get married.
And he was like, this year? And she goes, ever.
Really? Ever?
Yeah.
For eternity. Huh?
And it was, and okay, in the, and this part was true, and it was so trippy, is that when she's telling us this weird, like somebody went down the alleyway and this weird, like trash smell, like filled the room because the door was open.
Yeah.
And that was just like this weird, like extra dramatic smell-o-vision. But yeah, she said because our beliefs around finance are so different, that that's not compatible, and that's in a very important part of marriage. And if we got married, that we would fight about it. And so she said to keep our finances separate.
And we like to say that we don't really believe that, but also Madame Chan told us that we need to have more wood in our lives, and we just went and we bought a wooden bed based on basically, she told us that we should get more wood in our homes.
Now,
yeah.
What's her method? How does she – she didn't interview you guys, she didn't
– the day before –
she never met us before.
The day – no, she had a method. The day before, because we had a friend who ran a hotel who basically did a little bit of pre-work for us, she asked us for our birth dates and our birth times and where we were born on the planet, which I called up my mom and she gave me all that information.
Wow. So there's astrology connected with her fortune
telling. She had made up a whole bunch of charts. So she seemed to be very thorough about what she did.
But it was super fascinating because she sometimes would consult she would consult an old book and it was all in Chinese. And then she'd pick up her phone, close out Candy Crush, and look up something on her phone. And so there's just this old and modern technology that was really fascinating.
It made sense as she was telling it to us. And then later we started to realize that there were areas in which we had differences in the way that we saw things, specifically around money, which, you know, but she was like, you should stay together forever. That's fine. But you shouldn't combine your finances in the way that getting married would entail.
And she warned Stephanie that monogamy was probably not.
Oh my God, that part. That was so funny. So this was
the next
day. That's
what stuck out for me.
Right.
So this was the next day. And I had to say, so I brought a translator because we were like, let's just get a second opinion.
Yeah, this was above my level of astrology.
Right, I was like, maybe my fortune will be different. So the next day, and so this Nash, he was a young Taiwanese man, and he's my translator. And she's basically telling him that in my 50s, I'm going to still be with Josh, but have a lot of other men in my life. And then she's like, a lot of men. And so like as she's talking, this
Josh was not in there with
no,
you.
No, he didn't
right?
go
I wasn't,
that day.
No, okay. I did something else that day.
Uh-huh. Something else. And so as
it was my birthday,
as she's telling me this, Nash, my translator, he's like turning so many shades of red, and I'm like, what? What? And he's like translating it, and he's so embarrassed, and I'm laughing because he just don't expect that. And so I said, so she's saying my 50s will be my slut years, because I was like, that's funny. And then he gets even brighter red, and then he says, in Taiwan, we like to say you'll have a second spring.
That's such a nice euphemism, huh?
Wasn't it? It was so
it seemed natural that we would come back to Portland for that. there weren't all that many opportunities for that in Taiwan, at least not that I saw.
In Portland, there's whole cafes, I'm sure.
Sure.
Which brings me to the question, now that you're both back in Portland,
yes.
And you intend to stay, you said you actually just got an apartment in St. John's.
Yes.
What led to the move back here? Because when you left Taiwan, you traveled across the country. You were house-sitting on the East Coast for a while, then coming back here.
We did a cross-country adventure.
So Portland, you remembered how much you enjoyed it from before?
It's mildly personal, and you asked why I didn't bring Seth here. So now you'll find out. But basically, my mother announced, she said, you better get home because I'm going to die. And so I said, if you can wait until, you know, July when my contract is up and Stephanie is out of school, we'll come back. She's like, okay, but I'm going to die, so come back. So I came back, and she was on treatment for various things. And she's like, she decided that she wanted to discontinue the treatment. But because she's my mother and she doesn't really do anything on my schedule, she didn't quite let us know. And she thought she could stick it out for the rest of the year. So we went and we made a commitment to do some pet sitting at a house in Boston, because this way we'd be within an hour and a half drive of where my mother was.
In New York?
No, she was in Greenfield, Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
So it's, you know, about an hour and a half, 2 hours away from Boston. But it turns out that she pretty much decided that she was just going to discontinue her treatment as soon as we got there, a couple of weeks later. So we wound up having already made this commitment. We were in Boston for 3 months because it was okay. We made the commitment. But we knew that we were going to come back to Portland once that commitment was over.
And whenever I got homesick in Taiwan, it was definitely homesick for Portland.
Yeah.
Like,
not Boston. We weren't like, yeah, you know, I wish I was in Boston now, you know.
But you've described in the book that Tainan is kind of the Portland
of
Taiwan.
Tainan
really is.
Fixed gear track bikes, single origin coffee shops, and most importantly, I don't know if this is still the case, artists who couldn't afford to live in Taipei or other cities are like, I'm going to go live in Tainan because then I can be an artist and only work 20 hours a week and still be able to pay my rent.
Yeah.
Which, you
but
know,
more of a creative community then.
Yeah, it's very creative. A lot of outside street art. The only difference is there's no snobby baristas because people are very polite.
They're snobby baristas.
But
you
for
just,
them.
Not to, yeah, they're not snobby to you.
That's true.
Just to Josh? Or...
I've met snobby baristas all over Taiwan. And that's a good thing. I like that, you know.
But yeah, there's a lot of cool street art.
Where did we go where somebody served us coffee and they refused to let us put milk in it because that would spoil
the
single origin coffee?
That's very Portland, right?
That's very, very Portland.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I think it was Shinju, though, which kind
of... I think that's
yeah,
where
we didn't write about that.
But yeah, it was pure Taiwanese coffee because they make their own coffee
don't
there.
Don't put milk in that. You'll ruin it.
Yeah, but there's not enough to export because it's so good. It's such high demand. They just don't have enough.
It was good coffee.
It is really good.
I would have preferred having the option.
I still like milk in my coffee, no matter how good it is, no matter how good the bean.
You ended up drinking it black, though, right?
I did, and it was... Okay.
To please the barista.
Yeah, it was fine. Exactly. Very Portland.
And they had like there was a barista, but they actually were an artist. They were just baristing until their ship came in.
Yep.
Very interesting people. It is just, you know, before we leave Taiwan, it is one of the most interesting places in the world. And, you know, if anybody wants to go visit Taiwan, they can contact me through the station or Google Joshua Samuel Brown.
And they've got the book, Formosa Moon.
Yeah.
Plus the reading.
Yeah, come to the reading. And that's I love the place very much. I'll always go back there. And I lived there for a long time. But at this point, I was just so homesick, you know, for Portland that I wanted to come home. And I'm getting up there in age, if you know what I mean.
Now, before we get back to those infernal puppets, maybe I should use a different adjective.
They're
right here, Floyd and Hazel.
I can't believe you're sharing the stage. I'm sharing the stage with you.
Josh, you actually have a book, a manuscript you just completed a publishing contract.
Yep.
And it's not a travel book.
Not a travel book.
It's not about Taiwan, I don't think.
It takes place. Part of it does take place.
Oh, okay.
It's not
can
about
you tell
Taiwan.
Us about It's a comic novel, though,
it's
right?
It's a comic novel. It's called Spinning Karma, and it's with Camphor Press. I've just signed the contract for it, and it should come out between summer and autumn of 2020. And it is about a Buddhist cult leader who does something absolutely terrible for the noblest of all reasons, much in the way that the bodhisattva must enter into hell to save souls. He does some things that are particularly awful and winds up being held prisoner in a brothel for a while. Strange things happen, and it winds up turning into a media-driven propaganda war between China and America.
Well, it sounds a lot like my life in the Carl Crowley cult, so
it might be.
I can relate.
Are you going to sue me? Should I get you to sign a waiver saying that you...
Right.
An NDA question.
Biographical.
I would love it if
too
you
close
were
to home.
One of the early readers of it, so just let me know.
Oh, no, I'd be happy to. Right. I'm looking forward to it.
I got to be one of the early test readers, and it's been such a joy watching it just change and mature, and I've really enjoyed it, and it's very funny. I like it a lot.
One of the issues with it is that I had initially started working on it during the Obama era, and so there's a subplot that involves a political thing in America that did not make sense under Donald Trump. It just didn't make sense anymore. And so what I did was I decided to be optimistic and push it forward just a year from today. It didn't, you know, in which it's like it's a post-Trump era. And, you know,
thank God.
Yeah, so I decided I needed to be optimistic. And so my publisher's like, well, yeah, but what if he's still president next year? I'm like,
oh, don't even consider that.
I said, yeah, that's, you know, then my novel is going to be the least of my worries at that point.
That's true. We'll all suffer.
Yeah.
Well, enough with the highbrow literary conversation.
Highbrow literary stuff.
Let's get to the comedy and those infernal puppets. Now, before you and Stephanie left for Taiwan, Josh, you had a Monday night show here on Cable, and that was Puppet Radio Theater.
It was so fun.
Yeah, how'd you come up with that premise? Because initially you started doing radio sketches, and then you had your own show on Monday nights.
We needed something to tie the sketches together, and the sketches had nothing to do with puppetry whatsoever. They were just radio comedy sketches that we had written, and that we got all the talented people at KBOO to come on in and do voices for, and then we would edit them. And what tied it together was the idea that when the station closed down, these puppets would take over and they would find, for some reason, CDs and tapes that people had sent of their comedy stylings, and they would play them and then make fun of them. But of course, we were the ones who wrote the comedy as well. And it allowed us to do some things. Like, we would always start the show with the station shutting down.
Which is funny, because we liked just creating these things that weren't true, since Cable was always on the air.
Shut down.
Like, we just kind of like shifting reality a little bit. What did you do one? Because it was always like a show that was ending that didn't exist.
Once we did an English version of The East is Red, which is basically the Chinese communist anthem from the Cultural Revolution, but we had a folk singer sing in English, "The East is red, the sun is rising, Chairman Mao is our sunshine."
But we had like a punk rock. Seth did a punk rocker.
And Seth is your brother,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Famous Yorick Jones.
He's still my brother.
So we had three puppets, and we were kind of spitballing titles, and we thought it would just be funny, the idea of puppets hosting
on the radio,
a radio show.
Yes.
He's listening now. We could call him if he's listening. He's got an old-timey radio that only gets KBOO.
Yes. And I thought it would be fun to actually make the puppets. And so Seth has Lucky, I have Hazel, and then Josh has Floyd.
Yeah, about that. And, Seth sold
of course,
Lucky.
They did the introduction to the show tonight, so we got a nice taste of the
Lucky.
Puppets.
He sold it for hernia medication.
Now, we should give a shout out to the guy that got both of us started, actually, and Ralph Semperbone,
who's with the Ubu Hour.
Not doing the Ubu Hour anymore, but he did it for, I think, 20 years or so, and it was kind of a bastion. Or a bastardization, I think I meant to say.
But it brought in a
of
lot
radio
of
comedy.
Yeah. The first sketch that we did was, I think we still have it as the Ubu Christmas, which is a sketch that we did about Christmas. And
Lou Reed's Christmas album.
That was the second thing.
That was one.
That was, the Christmas. So it must have been Christmas 2014, I guess, or 2013.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Now, we're not going to play those tonight, but as promised, we're going to play a few sketches
for the
listeners. The first one I picked out is a good segue from our talk about Taiwan and Formosa Moon, and this one's called Patchouli Moonbo in China. Do you want to set that one up for us?
You go. You're Patchouli Moonbo.
I love Patchouli. She's one of my favorite characters. So Patchouli is a caricature of a hippie, and her boyfriend River are in a sweat lodge, and she's very navel-gazing, and she has her cell phone in the sweat lodge. I don't know, she's doing Instagram or something. And it explodes.
You'll never know.
And it like turns into, so she gets sucked into a time portal. And so occasionally it'll open up, and she gets sucked and goes back into time. And so the first one was Poland.
She went to Warsaw during the yes. Which a little bit dark.
Got a little bit dark. But the second one.
That was during World War II.
Yeah.
On Holocaust Remembrance Day today.
And the second one we sent
I'm glad
in China.
That we didn't play that one.
Yeah, that was
no,
good
no.
idea. Good idea. But the second one, we were watching a movie about Confucius.
About Confucius with Chow Yun-fat, which I still think is a good movie.
And there's a moment where he's playing. It's not the erhu. It's the horizontal guitar.
Oh, man. It's not a pipa. It's
The one string?
Yes. No, no.
No, it's several strings and
we forget
horizontal.
But Confucius.
But he's rocking out. And we were like.
Clearly, he played music. That was one of the things that you did to be a gentleman and a scholar back then, is you had to be very well-rounded.
That inspired the entire sketch. Was they were like, wait a minute. What if he was like a musician and people followed him around like the dead?
Yeah. And then we thought, well, what if he actually played Grateful Dead songs? And we had a friend named Ellen, who we ran into today in St. John's, who played erhu. So we're like, can you play Grateful Dead songs on the erhu? She's like, yeah, if you give me a couple of days to figure it out. And so we brought her in. We recorded her just noodling away on an erhu playing dead songs. And Patchouli Moonbo goes back to
China. Now, this we have to hear.
Yes.
So here it is, Patchouli Moonbo in China.
Patchouli, man, can we talk?
Rev, you're wrapping the sage bundles too tight.
That's why they don't burn, right?
Well, I'm tense, man.
Yeah, babe, your aura's been off for days. Like, what's up?
Well, like, I feel like, you know, you're not even here sometimes. I mean, like, you just disappear for hours at a time.
I told you, River, ever since my iPhone blew up in that sweat lodge, things have been weird, you know? The time travel thing. But it's all good, right?
Well, I guess so. I don't know. Hey, I need to take a leak. Tie up this sage bundle for me, okay?
Sure, babe. Whoa.
Caught in a temporal vortex caused by a malfunctioning iPhone during a heavy sweat lodge session at Burning Man, Patchouli Moonbow travels through time. She's Patchouli Moonbow, hippie time traveler.
Patchouli? Aw, man. This is just like that fish show.
The master plays beautifully.
Yes, but I believe he has saddened.
As are we all. We have been long away from Lu. The master despairs of never being allowed to return to the land of his birth.
What is that light?
Blue as a robin's egg, bright as an evening star.
That's a good one. You should write it down.
So Confucius can take the credit? Why bother?
Someone is stepping out of the light. It looks to be a woman.
A pale woman? But where are our manners?
Whoa, where am I? Or when am I?
You are in the encampment of the most wise sage Confucius, on the outskirts of the state of Song.
How is it that you even speak our language?
Oh man, am I going to have to explain this every time trip?
Perhaps it is better not to ask.
We must take you to see the master. He will want to greet you.
The master? Sounds kind of patriarchal, but you know, one in Rome.
What?
Master Kong, we have brought a guest.
Master Kong?
Yanhui, silence is a true friend who never betrays.
But Master Kong, we have a visitor.
I think the master is trying to tell you that he wishes to continue playing.
Oh, far out. Can I jam with you? Good thing I brought my frame drum.
Never give a sword to a man who can't dance. Where are my manners? A guest has come from afar. Please, offer her some tea.
Yes, Confucius.
Please, enjoy some tea, and tell us how you came to come to Song.
My name is Patchouli Moonbow, and I'm like a time traveler. Defective iPhone, kinda complicated.
Ah, a fellow traveler. We have been traveling ourselves for many seasons.
Right on. So you guys just travel around the countryside, jamming out, you know, hanging with the locals?
Many are those in the kingdoms claiming to seek the truth. Few are those who wish to hear it. My followers and I tend to wear out our welcome, forcing us to move from state to state.
Wow, just like a rainbow gathering.
What is this rainbow gathering? Are they a school of philosophy as well?
Kind of, I guess. You know, a bunch of brothers and sisters traveling around, grooving out on the vibes. Lots of love. And kind buds.
Wherever you go, there you are.
You're so deep, man. Like, how is it that you're not hooked up?
What is this hooked up?
You know, like with a lady? Sensitive new age guy like you? I'm surprised you don't have groupies.
Yes. The master has a wife, but they have been apart for many years because of political difficulties.
I get that. My boyfriend River is feeling kind of aggro over the way I drop in and out of the time portal. I really feel for you, Kung Fu.
Not Kung Fu, please. We refer to the master as Confucius.
Right on. I once knew this guy who changed his name to all vowels. Nobody on the commune knew what to call him.
Commune?
Better not to ask.
They must often change who would be constant in happiness or wisdom.
I know, right? I try to tell Riv that maybe this is like a gift from the universe. Maybe the Great Spirit wants me to, like, I don't know, help people and stuff.
If you go, no one may follow. That path is for your steps alone.
Kung Fu, that is so deep.
Master Confucius.
Sorry, Confucius. How long have you been touring?
I've been in exile for nearly 20 years now. My attempts at reform made me unpopular at the court of my home state. Other states find my political ideas troublesome. So I wander.
Trouble ahead, trouble behind.
Ah. That notion just crossed my mind.
You're so deep. Sometimes I wish my boyfriend, you know, River, could see a big picture.
Better a diamond with a flaw than a pebble without.
Master, I do not wish to interrupt your rap session with our foreign guest, but oughtn't we not be considering the matter of our return to Lu?
Yanhui, you're really bringing me down.
1,000 apologies, Master.
Maybe when you get back to Lu, you can offer them a peace offering, like this sage bundle.
Master, this gift smells like hemp.
Look at me, total space cadet. Wrong bundle.
It is most fragrant.
This is the plant which those in the countryside use to ease the suffering of daily toil. It is not for those who lead the life of the mind.
Thank you, student. I'll be the judge of that.
You can hold on to it if you like. Riv and I have a job clipping on a med farm in Cali.
I have no idea what you just said, but I accept your gift.
I don't usually go for older dudes, but you're pretty groovy.
Thank you.
Not to be ageist, like, old age is totally a groovy thing. True, you're like shouldered off the stage, but then you're given such a pleasant front row seat, you know?
I think that you need to work on your aphorisms. That one is too cumbersome. How about, every silver lining has a touch of gray?
That works too.
The light is returning.
Oh, super groovy to hang with you guys, but the portal's calling. I'd love to come back sometime, but I never know where the portal will take me.
Goodbye, strange foreigner!
Farewell. Wherever you go, go with all of your heart.
Wherever you go with all your heart. That's a good one.
That one is mine.
Ah, Yanhui, one man gathers what another man spills.
Ah, yeah, Master.
Where will Patchouli Moonbow go next? And when? What historical figures will she annoy? Tune in for the next installment of Patchouli Moonbow, Hippie Time Traveler.
God, that was a terrible sketch.
Oh, man, I love it. She's groovy. Patron saint of Portland, Patchouli Moonbow.
I was just queuing up the next piece that we're going to listen to, but of course that was Patchouli Moonbow in China.
Time
and Stephanie,
traveler.
You were playing the lead title role there.
I love that character so much.
Now, the next sketch I wanted to definitely get in because I think it's one of my favorites, maybe my favorite Puppet Radio Theater sketch. This is a little longer, about 13 minutes.
Fixie McGilligan. It the features, leprechaun of lesser expectations.
Which is a good Irish accent. I can just do the Lucky Charms guy.
Because I lived in Newfoundland, by. It's actually a Newfoundland. Trixie's from Newfoundland. People don't know that. They think that he's Irish.
Is there anything you want to say to set this one up, Josh?
He's from Dildo, which is actually a town in Newfoundland. You can look it up.
Is that true? Dildo?
Yes, there's a town called Dildo. It's in Newfoundland. Go ahead, laugh. Look it up.
I would just say that
they got a web page and everything.
This utilized a lot of great talent at Cabo. So we really were happy with this sketch.
Larry Andrews is in there, Ralph Semprebon himself.
If I can set up a little bit.
Oh, sure.
So Ralph, people who know Ralph from his work on the Ubu Hour, may or may not know, I think it's okay for me, he's a tax preparer, which is the last thing that you'd expect him to be, but that's his day job.
That's true. It is the last thing I would expect him to be.
And he's apparently a very good one. He's giving me tax advice. But Ralph basically, we're like, we're going to make you a tax preparer. He's like, great, I'll do it. And Larry is somebody who's – Larry has the attitude of somebody who could, you know, almost a – like a Mr. Roper sort of, from Three's Company. So we made him. The idea is basically this leprechaun brings sort of like It's late for me here. I'm sorry.
Like, all right, I can jump in.
You know how Willy Wonka liked to torment children?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he takes them on adventures, but it's, well, my favorite line, it sums it up. Sometimes you get the leprechaun you want, sometimes you get the leprechaun you deserve.
And that's the best lead into the Trixie, the leprechaun of lesser expectations.
Suckiest birthday party ever.
Why are you always so negative, Dylan?
Dylan's right. It's been raining for hours, and your parents didn't even hire a clown. They don't even have a television. No wonder nobody showed up, Portia.
Oh, come on, guys. We can still have fun. Have some cake.
Gluten-free cake? It tastes like sawdust.
It's not my fault my mom has celiacs.
My dad told me that if kids really want something, they should send a wish to a leprechaun.
There's no such thing as leprechauns, stupid.
You don't know that. Come on. Let's try it.
I wish for a leprechaun.
I wish a leprechaun would take us away from this lame party.
What's happening? What's that light?
Someone's stepping through.
Hello, boys and girls. I heard you wishing, and I've come all the way from Leprechaun Land.
Oh, my God!
I don't believe it.
Are you really a leprechaun?
As sure as the nose on your face, young lass.
Prove it.
I heard someone complaining that the birthday cake wasn't much to their liking. Well, perhaps you like these treats a bit more. Here you go. One for each of you.
Larabars?
They were on sale at Grocery Outlet. They're also gluten-free. I understand one of your parents has celiacs. It's genetic, you know. Can't be too careful.
Are you gonna take us away to Magic Land?
Any place would suck less than this party.
Oh, you say that now. No time to dawdle. Take me hands, boys and girls.
You're in Carpet Warehouse in Avon, Indiana. Tis a fine, magical place with a more than adequate selection for all your flooring needs.
A carpet store? But why?
I think I can field that question, Trixie.
Hello there, Sven. Children, meet Sven. He's the general manager.
Hello, children, and welcome to Carpet Warehouse, the Midwest's second largest carpet store. First off, we're more than just a carpet store. We're a carpet superstore.
But I thought you were going to show us something magical.
Wait until Sven shows you the stain-resistant brands. You'll swear it's magic.
Couldn't you have taken us to an amusement park or something?
Or a candy factory?
Oh, my cousin Kevin can do all that. But you see, children, I'm the leprechaun of lesser expectations.
But why didn't we get you when we made our wish?
Yeah, luck of the draw. Sometimes you get the leprechaun you want, and sometimes you get the leprechaun you deserve.
Ahem. Step over this way, children. We have a lot of ground to cover. Pardon the pun. A little carpet joke. As the second largest carpet superstore in the Midwest, we have over 900 types of carpet.
Mind if I get some coffee, Sven? I've already seen the carpet.
It's in the break room. Help yourself. We'll start over here in the bees, which is everything from beige to brown. Now, the first thing you kids will want to know is how many shades of beige there are. And now we're at my favorite part of the tour, our stain-resistant brands. You there.
What, me?
What's your name?
I'm Billy.
Here, Billy, take this soda pop. Go ahead, take it.
Thanks, I guess.
No. Don't drink it. Spill it on that nice white carpet.
Gee, that looks like fun.
Trust me, the fun hasn't even started. I understand we have a birthday girl here today.
That's me.
Well, what's your name, birthday girl?
Portia.
Since today's your special day, you get to clean up the stain.
What?
Here's a rag. Just get down there and start scrubbing.
My, it's a day of wonders for you, lass. Well, Sven, I'm sure I speak for the children when I say we'd love to spend more time learning from you all about carpets and other things carpet-related. But it looks like it's time for the next leg of our adventure.
Wait, I have presents for all of you.
Is it candy?
Better than candy. Here's a carpet sample book for each of you.
Take them, children. You have to mind your manners in the Midwest.
See you next time, Trixie.
like an H&R Block?
Yeah, it's not a goddamn H&R Block, cocksucking H&R Block bastards. The Applebee's of goddamn tax accountancy.
Boys and girls, meet my friend Claude Jensen. He's a tax preparer.
An independent tax preparer. Last of a dying breed, thanks to those goddamn bastards at H&R Block. Goddamn cocksucking monopolist.
Mind your language, Claude. There are children present.
Oh, sorry, Trixie.
Do boys and girls know what a tax preparer does?
Something boring and stupid.
Something vital to our nation's economy.
You ask your parents how boring and stupid I am when they've got 12 hours to file and they mistakenly filled out a 1040Z when they should have filled the full Schedule C to account for self-employment tax. Yeah, they'll be busting down my door at 9:45 p.m. on the 15th. See if those cocksuckers at H&R Block will help them.
It smells funny in here.
Yeah, I'm between cleaning ladies.
Could I have some coffee?
I wouldn't drink that, kid. It's been there for days. I have some Sanka in the cupboard. The water from the tap is usually hot enough. There are some packets of Cremora and Sweet'n'Low in the drawer somewhere. No sugar, though. Don't touch the stuff.
I want to go home!
We've still got another 45 minutes until the magic portal of lesser expectations recharges.
Fix yourself some Sanka. Well, where was I? Anyway, if your parents had any sort of self-employment income and used a 1040Z, they'd have an auditor up their asses so fast. They'd get the CP2000 and they'd be lost. That's why I'll tell them to use the Schedule C long form, which allows for itemized business deductions of all work-related expenses, minus, of course, reasonable depreciation based on work-related activities. To really understand the beauty of the Schedule C long form, you need to understand how depreciation is calculated using these simple charts. It'll even get more complicated when you have the domestic production activities deduction, and hopefully they won't have to file the alternative minimum tax or passive losses. Yeah, I remember one client back in 95 came crying to me about getting audited. Looked at his return, saw he'd itemized a jet ski. Turns out some jerk off at H&R Block told him he could, as long as he had a photograph proving he'd used it for work. I got him off with minimal penalty. No non-compliance charges, H&R Block jerk-off.
Well, Claude, I think I speak for the children when I say we'd love nothing more than to sit here all day and listen to your fine and perfectly interesting stories concerning tax preparation. But the portal takes an hour to reset. Quickly, children, hold hands, hold hands!
Always a pleasure, Trixie. Hey, the kids went a little heavy on the Cremora package. Can you bring some more?
I wanna go home!
The fate of the portal is on a special preset, a magical preset, and the next stop will be our most magical and culturally relevant adventure yet. Quickly, children, keep holding hands! Keep holding hands!
What the? This is more like it.
I recognize this from the movies. It's Coney Island.
Let's not get our hopes up quite yet, children.
Well, ain't there, Trixie? Funny to run into you in a place like this.
Ah, it's another leprechaun with another group of kids.
That'd be me cousin, Kevin McGilligan, the leprechaun of hopes and dreams.
Taking your group for another amusement park trip, are you, Kevin?
Aye, we got a special pass, so we can go to the front of every line. A good thing, too, as afterwards, I'll be taking them to the candy and ice cream factory for free samples of every flavor.
That'll do their long-term oral hygiene no good.
You have a good time, Kevin. Meanwhile, I'll be taking me group into the matzo factory.
What?
First, there's cotton candy for everybody.
But why did you bring us to the Coney Island?
The matzo factory is across the street from the park. There's more to Brooklyn than traffic and hipsters, you know. Brooklyn is the number one exporter of matzo. But Rabbi Greenberg will tell you all about it.
Hello, Trixie. Hello, boys and girls. My name is Yehuda Greenberg, but you can call me Rabbi Greenberg. For the next 90 minutes, we're going to go on a fascinating tour through the history of a food for which my people are known, mainly matzah. Now, to understand why matzah, or unleavened bread, is so important to Jewish people, we have to go back many thousands of years to our days of bondage in Egypt. Excuse me, little boy, don't go near the mixer. If you touch it, it's no longer kosher. Now, where was I? All right, Exodus. The only two ingredients in Passover matzah are flour and water. Anything else, and it's not considered kosher for Passover. Timing is also critical. The moment the flour touches the water, you have only 18 minutes from start to finish.
I want cotton candy.
Nah, I told you, lassie, that'll rot your teeth.
Even 1 minute longer and it's no longer kosher. In the old days, they had to time it with a series of egg timers. Nowadays, of course, I'm allowed to use my wristwatch. Do any of you boys or girls have any questions?
Are we done yet?
We still have 25 minutes before the portal returns. Rabbi Greenberg, let's go back to Exodus a bit. You can't underestimate the importance of a good education.
All right, Trixie. Now, most people assume that the Hebrews were used in Egypt as slaves to build the pyramids. This, however, has been proven to be false. In fact, it's more likely that my people were used in the less exciting business of building granaries and other farming-related tasks. And now, you children, you know everything there is to know about the history and preparation of matzah. Now comes the part I'm sure you all have been waiting for. I'm going to let you try a little bit of matzah.
Good, because I'm starving.
I haven't eaten anything in hours.
Bet you wish you'd taken that Larabar now, eh?
With a little piece of candy fruit jelly on the side, why not?
Oh no! I'm afraid there's no time for warm matzah and jelly candy, children. The portal's back. Should have gone easier on Exodus, Rabbi.
What you specifically said?
Greetings, children! Hold hands! Hold hands!
Well, look at that. The sun's nearly set. Well, time sure flies when you're having fun, right, children?
My birthday!
Children? Ah, my work here's done. I'd best be making my way back to Leprechaun Land.
Kids? Portia, it's time for your friends to go home now. Look, they're all asleep. I guess the party must have tuckered them out.
Where did these carpet samples come from?
Whether it's sunny outside or cloudy and gray, you can think of a worse way to spend your day than with Trixie Gilligan, the Leprechaun of Lesser Expectations.
Hey, that was Trixie, the Leprechaun of Lesser Expectations, as performed by the Puppet Radio Theater folks. And you know, that's all for this episode of the Holy Crowley Hour. If there's even the slightest possibility you like what you heard, you can tune in every fourth Monday of the month from 11 p.m. to midnight, and you can stream and download previous episodes from our Holy Crowley Hour page on the KBOO website at kboo.fm. Many thanks to both our human and puppet guests tonight, Joshua Samuel Brown, Stephanie Huffman, Floyd and Hazel. You can find out more about Josh and Stephanie, their book Formosa Moon, and all their recent shenanigans at josambro.com for Josh and twilly23.com for Stephanie. And they'll be reading and signing books for Formosa Moon at Belmont Books, 34th and Belmont, that's Saturday, February 22nd at 3 o'clock. A big thanks to Crowley Cult member emeritus Jason Harder and to Jeff Henderson, our Holy Crowley Hour engineer on call. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying see you all again next month, Monday, February 24th, 2020 at 11 p.m. In the meantime, I'll be heading outside the KBOO studios to catch a ride back to Carl Crowley headquarters in Beaverton. Carl will be picking the puppets and me up in the Crowley Cult limo where we'll be downing puppet readers and mooning, Formosa mooning, you might call it, unsuspecting Beaverton denizens who are still up and about at this godforsaken hour. Good night, everyone. Coming up next is a big hole where Joe Woods used to be. Joe, if you're listening from someplace far away, we wish you well, and we're sorry you can't be here now.
Just a